bringing Seattle to the world and the world to Seattle. Follow us on Twitter at iGuestInfo. Send us your questions and we'll try to answer. Now enjoy the show.
Well, welcome back to another show. We have another great guest for you today because that's what we do. We bring you great guests all the time. How am I so lucky to keep getting great guests after great guests after great guests? Well, for one thing, Seattle's loaded with talent, and that talent knows other talent, and we can just keep bringing you fantastic people doing great things all the time. So today, I am just, it's a real pleasure to have New York Times bestselling author Lori Frankel on the phone with me. She's a member of the Seattle7Writers.org. If everybody remembers, we've talked about them in the past. Gar Stein was a big force that brought Seattle 7 Writers to the area, doing a lot of things for literacy, getting books into children's hands, doing a lot of nonprofit things, supporting writers, doing workshops, and then supporting local authors in the area. And Lori is one of those, I believe, one of the original seven. Is that right, Lori?
Nope, unfortunately not one of the original seven, but glad to be a member now.
Well, they should change it to the Seattle 14 writers.
I know. The numbers in flux a little bit, so they've kept the name the same, but it is confusing.
Well, it's a great organization.
Great organization.
And people can follow that at Seattle, and then the number 7writers.org if they want to find out more about what Seattle 7 Writers is doing. But Lori,
yes, it's a great organization.
It is. It definitely. And in fact, I just saw something that you guys also have a band. So
yes.
Not only are they writers, but they have a band on top of all of that. And there's going to be a show tonight over in Queen Anne or something like that.
Anne Books tonight at 7 o'clock.
At 7 o'clock. Is it free?
It's free.
Wow, we love free. Free's great.
Yes, it's free. And it should be great fun.
Well, anytime you get people who love music and love art in general, and it's free and it's a nice night out, I mean, just fun just naturally follows.
Yes, I agree. And it's really nice to be able to pair reading and writing with music because it just brings two core audiences together.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Now, your husband's in the band, right?
That's right. That's right. My husband is in the band.
And you're
my husband is all of the musical talent in our household.
Well, you can't have all the talent, I guess, because you have the writing.
That's right, because that would not be fair.
Well, you have this great book, Goodbye for Now, which I read, and you also have another one, which I'm going to read, called The Atlas of Love.
That's right.
Tell everybody what you want them to know about Goodbye for Now, because I don't want to make it a spoiler or anything, but it is a really fun read.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad you liked it. Goodbye for Now comes out in paperback tomorrow. So that is the exciting news of this week. It is a book, it is a novel, a love story set in Seattle about a software engineer who invents a way for people to email and later video chat with their dead loved ones. It's not a supernatural story. It's not ghosts. It's not magic. It's computer science.
Well, it's really interesting and a really great concept because I had never thought of that before. That's probably why your book's doing so good, because it makes kind of sense, you know, because you're like, yes, if somebody could just do that, that would be awesome.
Yes, and yes, indeed. It's an idea that I came up with when my grandmother died. She and I were very close, and we had emailed each other a lot, and I understood that I couldn't have her back, but it seemed to me that a clever software engineer could program my computer such that I could still correspond with her via email, and that just made perfect sense to me. And my husband, who, in addition to being very musically gifted, is also himself a software engineer, kept explaining to me that was not possible, and so instead I wrote a novel about it. It turns out to be a much better idea for a novel than an actual product, although then since I started on this project, the technology has actually gotten remarkably close to what I made up for the book, which is also a fairly remarkable thing to happen when your fictions start coming true.
Mm-hmm. Well, how does the writing process happen for you? How does that start? Do you just start with a basic idea, like your grandmother passed away, and then it kind of just builds from there?
Yes. In that particular case, I actually sat with that idea as an idea for a computer program for some software for years, which makes no sense because I don't, in fact, make software or products of any kind. But I just really thought that was such a good idea for really a long time, for a couple of years, before I realized all in a flash one night that, no, this is a good thing to write about, not a good thing to do in real life. At the beginning, I thought it was a play, and I started it as a play. But then my first novel came out, and I became a novelist. So then that idea became a novel as well, and that was a really nice trajectory, I think, for that idea, mm-hmm. to go from life, which was not possible, to a play briefly, and then to a novel.
Do you still want to write a play?
You know, it was a really different idea for me when it was a play. It was also a different plot, and I would love to write that too. You know, in addition, like as a companion piece, but I haven't done it yet. I have not gotten back to it yet. And I love the theater. In a lot of ways, it is my first love. And so I sort of hold out hope for that. And I have these ideas all the time that I think, oh, I will write a play. But my writing process is very solitary, and writing plays is very not solitary. So at the moment, I think I stick to novel writing because it's something I can do by myself in my house, and that's just not true of plays.
How often do you write? You write every day? Do you write in the morning? Do you write at night? What does that look like?
Well, it depends. You know, I also have a four-year-old, so consistency is not really the best thing in my life, as it happens. Some flexibility is required. When I'm writing, I write every day, but there's a lot that goes into the being an author that is not necessarily putting words on pages. And so sometimes there are months that go by where I'm doing something else, like promoting the last book, or doing work for Seattle 7, or the beginning of the book writing phase part, for me at least, is not a lot of words on paper. It's a lot of wandering around the house. So I do wander around the house every day, but I don't necessarily sit down at the computer and write every day.
Well, it's amazing having the New York Times best-selling author now always forever will be attached to your name. You will always be a New York Times best-selling author.
No, in fact, I'm not. It's sad, but it's not true. It's not the case. I wish. I hope. Maybe soon. But no, not yet. Not so far.
Okay, well, we're going to try to make it happen over here.
Thank you. That would be great. I would appreciate that so much.
We want people to put you on that list. We need more Seattle people on that list for one thing, you know.
I agree.
And
I completely agree.
We ought to have the Seattle Times best-selling author list. Do they have that list? I don't think they do.
Yeah. Sometimes it's compiled and sometimes it is not. And I think that varies. I don't know exactly what the rules on that are. They're extraordinarily complex. You know, you sort of have this idea like, oh, there's a list and they rank the authors and it's based on sales and it's very simple, but it isn't very simple. It's very complicated. And I don't actually know what all of the rules are.
Well, there needs to be a better way of getting at that. And we certainly should have something. I mean, with all the talent that's in Seattle, I mean, just one person after another, you know, there's and doing wonderful things, we should be able to. Well, but that's kind of what Seattle 7 Writers is about, too, is promoting authors and writers in the area.
Yes, and that's sort of the really wonderful thing about the organization is that we promote reading and writing and literacy on lots of fronts rather than just one, and that's great. That's great for everyone, and it's great for us as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a four-year-old. Have you thought about writing children's books at all?
You know, I have thought about it, and I also flirt sometimes with writing books from the point of view of a child. And that is something that I'm in progress thinking about and working on. I don't know whether I will write children's books or not ever. It's one of those. I've read a lot fewer of them, and though I read, as you will imagine, a lot of children's books these days, I don't have a lifetime of it behind me. I read them when I was a child, and then I took, you know, 30 years off, and now I'm reading them again. And that's not true of novels, which I, in fact, read all the time. And so when I sat down to write a novel, I felt like I had a lot of training in novel writing because I had done so much novel reading, and I don't quite feel qualified yet to do that for children's books. And, of course, you know, your kid keeps getting bigger, and so he ages out of those books and into other books. I feel like I would need to do more research on that front before I started writing them myself.
It is amazing, though, that the same classics that we loved as children, our children love, and
yes.
they just carry forward the, you know, Dr. Seuss kind of books, and they're really easy readers on those, and he really did a huge service, you know, Dr. Seuss,
yeah.
for one, with,
for sure.
with reading for children.
Yes, it's true, and it's astonishing to me, all of the books that I love that my son also just loves. And that they don't feel dated to him. And in fact, some of them, you know, were already dated when I read them. And yet there's something about them that's really wonderful and that we all always come back to them again and again.
Exactly. They're classics. And who would think 1 foot, 2 foot, red fish, blue fish, or whatever would be a classic?
Yeah, it turns out that simple is the way to go.
Exactly. Well, you know, humans are not really into complication. I mean, some people are, but the masses are not into overcomplicating things whatsoever.
Yeah, it's true. And I find all the time that I the things that I'm reading to my son impart lessons that I think, oh yeah, I should be doing that too in my own writing, and that's also fairly remarkable, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about your mom and how she calls your books her grand books, because I just thought that was so. Of course, now she has the grandchild, so I don't know if she
indeed.
Still thinks the books are grand books, but
yes,
I thought that was really sweet.
It is really sweet. Both of my parents are dream parents on this front. They're very, very supportive, very excited and enthusiastic about the books and about their being out in the world. They're very, very excited, and that's great. I mean, I cannot recommend highly enough having good parents and supportive people that close to you in your life.
Mm-hmm. You grew up on the East Coast, but now you're living in Seattle. Do your parents still live in the East Coast, or are they over here on the West Coast now?
No, they're still living in Maryland, which is really too bad, and I try every day to convince them to move out here, and I'm working on it. I'm wearing them down, I think. But, you know, they have a life out there, and they enjoy it sometimes being sunny in February, and both of those things are hard to argue with.
Yes, definitely.
They come out and visit, though, for a few weeks at a time in the summer. We often go back for a few weeks at a time in the winter. So I see them. I see them pretty frequently. I also, not surprisingly, since I just wrote a whole book about video chatting, video chat with them almost every day. So I see them a lot, just not live and in person.
Right. Isn't that amazing about
amazing.
You know, Skyping and video chatting and FaceTime and all that thing? It's like the Jetsons have come to life.
It is amazing how true that is. You know, my four-year-old is living here in the future where he video chats with his grandparents almost every day, and I just think that's astonishing. That's the future, but it isn't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started the book, I thought I was going to have to set it. I thought it was going to be a little bit of science fiction. I thought it was going to have to be set in the future in a time where everyone video chatted all the time. But no, we're pretty much living there now. It turned out not to have to be science fiction at all.
Well, it's a really fast read, and by fast read, I mean you're not burdened down with a lot of complexity, looking up words, that type of thing. It's a really friendly read, which is right up my alley, because those are the books I love to read. I hate to have to have, well, now that I have an e-reader, I can just highlight the word, and it'll tell me, you know, what the word is. But there's so many books that I read, I'm like, What is all of this? You know, I mean, they're using words all the time that I have to stop and think. And of course, then it makes sense why they used it. You know, I'm like, oh, I learned a new word today. But I really like books because I'm busy like everybody else. And sometimes you just kind of get, I talk about this with Garstein, you start feeling guilty if you don't finish the book. You know, the book's hanging around, you haven't finished it. There's this guilt that kind of, you know, you're like, I really need to finish the book. It wasn't like that with your book at all. I picked it up. I downloaded it on my e-reader. I had it in 30 seconds. I started reading it. It just flew by. It was just a fantastic read. In fact, this book would make a great movie.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you very much. I'm glad you think all of those things. The film rights have been optioned. So last I heard, they were nearing completion on a script.
That's awesome.
It is.
What does that look like? Do they just email you one day and say, hey, we want to make your book into a movie, or do they call you, or how does that even happen?
I have an agent who's my book agent, and she also does film. So my agent takes care of all of that stuff, which is great. In fact, the best thing about the film is none of it's my problem. It all happens beyond me and without me, and that's exactly. That's fantastic. So whereas so much of the book writing and selling process is, as you would expect, my responsibility, and therefore, you know, I have to live and die with the sales and the reviews and all of that, and this is not true of the film at all. My agent talks to people, and she has a film agent, and she talks to people, and all of this stuff goes down, but it's not my problem. It's not my fault. I have, however, met the people who are working on it, and they're lovely, and so that's been really exciting, too, just to get a glimpse into that world, which I knew nothing about until I started working with them a little bit.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Well, do you think that they're going to stay true to the script or to the original book, or do you care, or what's your thoughts on that? Because kind of once you let your baby go, then, you know, then what?
Yes. Yes. And the first time I chatted with them on the phone when we were still in negotiations, they were sort of very apologetically letting me know that they really loved it and they were going to stay very true to it, but sometimes changes occur. And I think that they were so hesitant about it because authors must freak out about that. But in fact, I felt like the opposite. I thought, well, of course, it's a movie. It's not a book, so it should be different. It's a different medium. I think in part because I had started it as a play and when I changed it, it became a very, like the point changed, the order of telling changed, the whole thing changed. And I think movies are different from books, and they should be. They have different strengths and different challenges, and so of course it's going to change. I think that they have stayed fairly true to it, but I also think that you know, changing it to take advantage of what you can do on the screen is a great thing to do, and I, you know, would be really excited to see it.
Well, you know, it makes sense because, you know, it might take you how many hours, you know, to read a book. Maybe you have 10, 12, 14,
yeah,
24 hours into reading a book, and then they have to put it on in like an hour, 30 minutes. So obviously those two things don't equate.
Yeah, right, of course. So, and it's just a completely different experience for you as an audience member because of that, among, you know, everything else. And so I think, yes, let's take advantage of that. What are the strengths of this medium, and how do they go with this particular text? I think that's fantastic and fascinating.
I think that's great that you started with it in your head kind of as a play, because then you could see it, like you were saying, in a movie or a TV or something. You had those acts kind of in your head already, and you were open to that, as opposed to, you know, somebody who might be not that like-minded and then have to struggle with the way that the that it was brought to, you know, action.
Yeah, and I think that that's really hard for audiences, too. I think that frequently the complaint that is leveled against films is, oh, it wasn't as good as the book, or they changed this thing from the book, and I feel really upset about that. And I just think, why? Why is that upsetting? It's different. It should be different. If it weren't going to be different, then there isn't any point in doing, you know, if you've already read and enjoyed the book, you need to go see the movie unless it's going to add something. And I think that addition is going to be the ways in which they diverge.
Right. The movie's kind of like the cliff note of the book. You know, you just kind of get the highlight of it, so to speak. I will say that I read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and then I really was afraid to see the movie because the book was so, there was so much detail in the book. And I thought, oh, you know, how are they going to get that? Because all that detail was kind of important. But I will say that even though they didn't get it all, that was one of the movies that I saw that was really, really, really close to the actual book itself. And even the casting was right on, I thought, with exactly how it kind of ran through in my mind. So I know that they can do it. I've seen it done. So
yes. Yes, yes, they can. And it's always like a translation, I think. And so it's interesting to see, you know, what they keep and what they change and how they do it, how they take something that was existing in your head and make it exist outside.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you get the film rights purchased, do you go out to dinner? Do you celebrate? You call your mom and dad?
Yeah, all of those things. That's pretty much what happened. you know, it's a lot of whirlwind at the beginning. There's often when there's good news, it comes one after another at the start, and that's the exciting part. You know, in this case, it all happened after the book had sold, but before it was really done. So I was also working on edits with my editor, and that was a really good time because you know, there was a lot to be excited about, but there was also a lot of work to be done and to distract myself with, and that was a really nice balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people write books and never get, you know, a film deal or any type
right.
of movie deal. But this is perfect for that genre. That Goodbye for Now is perfect for that.
Yes. Yeah. I hope that they will make it because I think it would be really interesting in film.
I do too, and I think it has a really good shot because that's relevant now. Everybody's. You know, that's kind of in the back of everybody's mind.
Yeah.
Everybody loses people that they love. Everyone has these video chat type of things going on.
Yeah.
No, I think they will, and I hope they put a cute guy in for Sam, and I don't know. And then the Atlas of Love was also from what I understand, I haven't read it, but I downloaded it yesterday, and I'm going to start reading it next. So I'm really looking forward to reading that.
Thank you.
That's another love story?
It is also a love story. I mean, I sort of feel like all stories are love stories. In fact, not even sort of. I always feel that all stories are love stories, and that's sort of the deal with narrative, is that narrative is about love stories. It is about three friends in graduate school, also in Seattle, who raise a baby together. So it's a story about non-traditional families and the way that families can be made up of people who are not necessarily related or, say, married. And you know, what those sorts of families look like and what that love looks like. You know, the way in which friends can become family to you. And we say that, I think, often in a very romantic way, like, oh, I love her like a sister. But what the other thing that I think happens is that when friends become family, they start to annoy you the way that family does.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a very complicated relationship in the way that family relationships are often very complicated. So that is what that book is about. And it also has a fairly traditional love story in it as well.
I'm looking forward to reading that as well. And, of course, I love books that take place in Seattle because I like when the writer points out little things, you know, oh, I've been there, I've seen that,
yeah.
I've had that same experience. But, you know,
yeah.
There's just some familiarity that's fun to read about as well. You kind of feel like you're right there.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I was writing The Atlas of Love right after I moved out here. And, in fact, I started it before I had even moved out here permanently. I was just coming out for summers for a while. And so it is written, the Seattle in it is a sort of wonderist, touristy kind of a Seattle. And Seattle remains that way for me, I think, because I am not native. I love it here in a way that is kind of different from thinking of it as home, and I think that probably comes out in the books, particularly
mm-hmm.
that first one.
Well, there's a lot to see. Seattle's really spread out, and there's so many parts of Seattle, and you have all the little islands, and you have all the, you know, different cities, and each city has something special to offer, and they have their own flavor going on with each neighborhood or each little city or each component. You have West Seattle on the other side, and, you know, people are taking the ferry, and, you know, I talk to musicians who from some of the other islands, you know, and they talk about being on, living on those islands and growing up, but then dreaming about coming to the city, like being old enough to take the ferry and come to the city and kind of make their way, you know. So there's this romance that even is a dance in the minds of the people who've lived here their whole life.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think romance is exactly it. I think Seattle is a very romantic city because when the weather is like this, there's just no place better to be. And when the weather is the other way, when it's sort of rainy and dreary, it's very poetic. It's not always pleasurable, but I think it's pretty romantic, and that makes it a good place to write about.
Definitely. And, you know, and I've talked to people, you know, about the rain, and they said that forces you inside to be creative. You know, when the weather's not great, you're in your basement or you're in your office and you're writing or you're doing music or you're doing something that's creative. And then when the sun comes out like this and everybody can get out and show what they've accomplished during the winter.
Yeah, and there's nothing that makes me happier than taking my laptop outside and sitting in my backyard and writing there. There's something very, very wonderful about being able to write outdoors.
You know, when I was a kid, I used to love when we had class outside. You know, like something would go wrong and they'd make us go outside. And it was always so special. I don't even know why, but it was so special that we were, and everybody became happy and friendly, and there was just something about having class outside that was magical.
Yeah, and I think it's exactly it. And, you know, eating outside, too. I'm always so happy when I can eat outside instead of in. There's just something very nice about that.
Yeah, it was funny because my husband and I were downtown on the 30th, and we were eating outside. It was a beautiful day. We were eating outside on the little sidewalk cafe. And then the next day was when May 1st was when the May Day ran.
Oh, right,
and I saw on the news the place that we were eating. And I thought, you know, it's so funny because yesterday everything was just so quiet and it was so beautiful and you could, you know, see the water from where we were eating and it was just so calm and nice. And then all that took place. I felt so horrible for those shop owners because, you know, they weren't in any of that. And most of those people didn't even come from Seattle. They were all out of towners that were kind of shipped in. And I just felt so horrible. And all the residents had to go back into their homes. All the shopkeepers had to, you know, they're losing money that day. And then the next day, though, I talked to some people and they're like, oh, back to normal. So I don't know why those people have to come to town and mess up everything.
It's a tough and complicated thing.
It is. You know, I understand their point to some degree, but I also, you know, feel bad for the little shopkeeper who's
Of course.
You know, you're just trying to make a living. But there is something magical about eating outside, just not on May Day downtown.
Right. Yes. Yeah, May Day's probably not the day for it. It sure was nice weather, though.
It was beautiful weather. We've just been having great, great weather. And, you know, it just makes everybody so happy is what I
think.
Everybody's friendly.
Even the protesters.
Exactly. Everybody's just in a good mood. And you'll probably get quite a few people come out tonight because the weather's so great. And then you can expose more people to the Seattle Seven Writers.
Yeah, it goes one way or the other way. Either you get lots and lots of people because it's such a nice night and people are out and about, or you get nobody because it's such a nice night and people don't want to be inside for it. So we'll have to cross our fingers. I think it will be worth giving up a few hours of daylight and sunshine.
Oh, definitely. You know, if I didn't already have plans, I would. I just found out about it about an hour ago, or I would have come down there as well. But I'm sure you'll get a lot of great people. So what's next for you? Are you in the process of writing something else, or what's going on?
I'm in the process of writing something else. Yes, I am in the process of book number three, and it's the beginning wandering around the house process and research. It's this one that's requiring a little more research than the ones in the past, and so I'm doing a lot of that in the way of, I don't know, groundwork, I suppose. It's a funny cycle. I taught for a lot of years, and that cycle was very predictable, you know, because there would be 9-10 months of school and grading, and then summers during, and I could write in the summer, and then I would go back to school and not do it anymore. And that was challenging for obvious reasons. You know, to take 10 months off of a project and come back to it was hard, mm-hmm. but it was a schedule that that was very predictable and that I know about in advance. And this one isn't so much, though it has the same cycles and ups and downs and times of writing versus times of reading and times of talking about books versus times of just hunkering down and doing it. But it's much less predictable. It's harder to see coming.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will look forward to that. Is there a release date on that one at all?
No.
Or did you have a deadline?
No, it's pretty early days yet. So I think once I get writing, it will go fairly quickly. That tends to be my pattern. I spend a long time thinking about it, and then when I'm ready to sit down and write it, it goes pretty quick. But I don't necessarily think that with book writing, how it has gone before is a good predictor of how it's going to go next. So I'm just not sure when this will get done.
Well, we can tell people they can follow along with you, though, and keep up with you on your website, which is lauriefrankel.net. You know,
yes.
There's another Lori Frankel.
I know.
What are the odds, you know? And she's a photographer.
I know.
In fact, when I was looking for your website, when we started talking months ago, I'm like, she is so talented. She is a photographer. She's a writer. She's got a movie deal. Oh, my gosh. And then it said the other one lived in San Francisco or something. But what are the odds, you know?
Yes, but, I know. My mother felt the same way. She was really surprised.
So go to lauriefrankel.net, and it's Frankel is ELFRANKEL .net.
Right.
And then they can link all the way to you through Twitter and your Facebook, and everything's done right there at your website.
Yeah.
And they can keep up with your books, and they can order the books. The paper book for Goodbye for Now comes out tomorrow, which is awesome. Or you can download it on e-reader like I do now. The e-reader's really changed the way, we look at books.
Yes. It's astonishing. I was posting on Facebook this morning an article I was reading that was talking about how many books you have in your house is a good predictor of how far your child will go education-wise. Kids who grow up with a lot of books go on to college and graduate school. And I have a lot of books in my house. But what I was wondering is whether it's the books themselves or the presence of people who read a lot, and what will happen when everybody has these e-readers and so they don't have physical books in their house. They have them, but they're not something that kids can flip through and see growing up. And I think that that's going to change a lot of things. I tend to go back and forth. I will read one on my e-reader, and then as soon as I'm finished with it, I want it in paper. I want my next book in paper because I missed that. But then when I'm reading that one, I think, what does this word mean? I don't know, and I don't want to get up and look it up. So I get addicted to that dictionary feature. It's hard to give up.
Exactly. Well, you know, and when I was talking with Garth last month, he was telling me that there was an article, I believe it was in the New York Times that day, about how we were talking about how textbooks now are in are on e-reader.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to stand in that whole big line anymore at the bookstore. You can just download your books. But the catch to this, which I did not know, which he pointed out, which just kind of ruined my day, thank goodness I'm not going back to college anytime, but the professors can keep up now with how much you're actually reading. That's not possible. Nobody would have graduated college if they had to read everything.
Yeah, and as a former college professor, I have to say, the notion that I have to do that now, that I need to go and check up on how far everyone has read and where they stopped reading and, you know, and what I'm going to do to my lesson plan tomorrow, given that I know that only, 10% of the class read this far, like, that just gives me fits. I think, oh, that's epically nightmarish. That's too much information for me as a professor. So I'm guessing that not a lot of people are going to use that feature.
Oh, good. I hope so, or else we will have a lot less college graduates.
Or a lot shorter reading lists.
Exactly. Well, Lori, thanks for joining us today. I really want everyone to support Seattle 7 Writers and Lori Frankel. Goodbye for Now was an awesome read. It's a fast read. You will love it. And then when the movie comes out, we can all go down and support it together.
Yes, that's right. That would be so fun.
That would be fun. You could have a party in Seattle.
I could have a party. I think I would have a party, yeah. Yeah. That would be great. Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been really fun.
It has been my pleasure. Go to LoriFrankel.com and support Lori Frankel. We want her on that New York Times best-selling list, but don't matter. She's going to have a movie anyway, so puya on them.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Lori, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There's so much talent in Seattle. I mean, just like I said before, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. There's just so much talent. There's so many great people. They're all doing great things. They're all trying to help the community and help what's going on, making the city that they live in a better place. It's going on all around the United States and really all around the world. You just don't hear about it all the time, but there's some fantastic people doing great things and caring about their, you know, fellow humans. So we are happy to bring them on and happy to talk to them. We have a song that we're going to play from a Seattle musician right now, and it's called, let me see, let's play Dirty from Letters from Traffic. And Letters from Traffic, one of the best bands that I have seen live, Letters from Traffic, they're a Seattle band. You can find them online as well and follow them, and they also play all around the country. But they are, there's a lot of them. I forget how many are in the band, like 11 or something like that. But they are just the most fun and the most charismatic, and they just put on a show that you get every cent of your dollar's worth. They are right up there performance-wise with any of the great, great acts performing around the world today. So you're going to listen to Letters for Traffic. I'm going to be right back. We're going to follow up with Tracy from the Seattle chapter of Chick Chat. She has a huge, huge Gatsby party coming up that you can go to. You can buy tickets and you can go to that party. She puts on parties like you would not believe. She does like one a month. I don't know how she continues to top herself, but we'll be back and talk to her in just a moment. And while you're waiting, you'll be listening to Letters from Traffic.
Your names are precious. Give them me, your eyes they shine. Give them me. Your fruits are bursting with the promise of a nectar and dribbles down my chin. Here's just a moment before it stains my shirt. See, you want to get dirty, dirty. I want to make a mess. I want to leave a permanent mark staying out after dark. I want to settle for less. Gonna put them on notice, notice. Folks drawing on lines. Move the color outside. Scribbles nice and wide. You can dig it as a sign. Up the top, I love your dark secret. Day needs a cocktail, shock, lockdown, wound up tight. Yeah. find the Buddha to the question before we put her to the flame. I think it's worth another look if you're living by the book, thinking I'm the one to blame. So you got a box of old bones in your closet on your shelf.
Was Letters from Traffic, Scott, Brad, and Chris and the guys. They are so, so fun to see live. If you have the opportunity to get out, they'll be they're around Seattle all the time, and then of course they're performing around the country as well. But one of the best groups I've ever seen live, right up there with, in fact I told them this, when I saw Elton John and Eric Clapton at Dodger Stadium, that was a very memorable time. I saw Billy Joel, again, another memorable time. But Letters from Traffic at the Triple Door last month, oh, my gosh, they totally, it was off the chart. We are back with Tracy from Chick Chat Seattle. She has a fantastic party coming up, a Gatsby party. And like I was saying before we went to the break, she puts on the most amazing parties in Seattle. And the great thing is you can come, too. You can buy a ticket, and you can go to this party. And, I mean, anyone goes to these parties, they're the most off-the-hook thing you've ever seen. They get a lot of press, a lot of coverage, and they're fun. And she continues to top herself every single month. I've never seen anything like it. You know how we all go to those parties where someone has a great party, but then they never have a great party again. It was like their party for that lifetime. Tracy does it every month, just about. Every month there's some type of party going on. So Tracy's going to tell us about her Gatsby party. It's not sold out yet. It's very close to being sold out, but you can get tickets. And, of course, everybody's talking about Gatsby. It's a great thing going on right now. There's a movie coming out. There's all kinds of things going on. So thanks, Tracy, for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me on once again. Yeah, I'm very excited. The remake of the movie comes out this Friday. And as you said, there's a lot of buzz about Gatsby. It's the cover of Vogue with Carey Mulligan and some really beautiful flapper and 20s-inspired dress and, you know, the soundtrack by Jay-Z and various other artists, and the movie itself is just going to be amazing. I mean, it was several years in the making, so I thought, why not have a party all around Gatsby? Because you know how messing up.
Yeah, well, oh my gosh. Well, you have the best parties. I went to the 50 Shades party, and it was really, I mean, it was amazingly fun, but there was so many beautiful people. But everybody was in a great mood and very kind and very friendly. But you had every detail covered, and then you had the Venetian ball party,
mm-hmm.
and
that was
also that was a huge success. And
that
now the Gatsby
amazing.
Party. So tell people where they can get tickets and what night it's on and all the little details so they can rush right out and be a part of this.
Well, thank you. It's Thursday, May 16th, and it's going to be at Aston Manor, which is in SoDo area of Seattle. It's not yet open to the public. It's a beautiful, beautiful speakeasy club, two stories, and so people should come just to kind of have bragging rights. They were some of the first to step inside. So when you step inside, it's like going back in time, which is going to be really fun. 1920s era attire is highly encouraged, so I think everybody will be dressing up. It's from 7 to 11, like I said, on May 16th, and what I try to do is I try to jam-pack a lot of things into a party without it being overload, but it makes sense. We have electric swing music and jazz provided by a local band called Didco Music, and they're just amazing and kind of like old-school jazz and swing, and we'll have some professional dance couples showing us some of the dances of that era, like swing and the Lindy Hop in the Charleston, and that'll lead us in a mini Charleston dance lesson. And then we have Mo, meet the bootlegger Mo. She's the woman who's in charge. She dreamed up a single silo Project V distillery. It's in Woodinville, and she's a female distiller. So she'll be there, and people will be able to sample a bunch of her different vodkas. So, you know, kind of going back to Prohibition time in the 1920s. There will be 1920s era themed cocktails, past appetizers for the VIP ticket holders. Everybody gets, if they purchase as of today, everybody gets, the gentlemen get a carnation for their lapel. And to help them out with flirting, they get red if they're single and white if they're spoken for. And then the ladies all get one of those long cigarette holders that were kind of really big during the 1920s. And cigars, and there'll be a, you know, smoking lounge. It's going to be a really fun time.
That's one thing I do want to say about your parties, that you're really good at identifying the single and the coupled up people. So that way you're not hitting on the wrong person, right? I mean, they're really identifying.
Yes.
Of course,
yes.
Once the drinking gets started, who knows?
Try to help singles as much as I can. But the problem, you know, so if you get the word out to your listeners, we need more guys. You know, women love to go to these parties and get dressed up, and then you have all these beautiful single women at my parties and not enough single guys. So we really need, I really need help getting the word out to the men.
For the men to get out. Well, we need to get the men out there, because I can attest to that. The party that I was at, there was a lot of really good-looking girls looking for guys, and there were more guys or more girls than guys. So if you're a guy, this is right up your alley. If you think you can't find a woman, this is where they're at. You're always wondering where they are. They're at Tracy's parties. That is exactly where they are.
Well, and it's going to be in a fun atmosphere, and there's going to be dancing. Derek Mazzoni, KEXP DJ, is going to be spinning while the band's on break. So there's plenty of opportunities to, you know, it's just a fun atmosphere. So it's not any kind of single weird pickup-y thing. And, you know, come in and dress and of the era, and it would be really fun. And so on Facebook, we're at Epiphany Events, E-P-I-P-H-A-N-Y, Epiphany Events, LLC. And then to purchase tickets, I should know this, right? It's GatsbySeattle.eventbrite.com.
Okay. Well, it's all over the place. So GatsbySeattle.eventbrite.com?
Uh-huh. B-R-I-T-E, Eventbrite. And they can also go to the Chick Chat Seattle page, and they can message me there, too, if necessary.
Right. So, yeah, we definitely want people to like your Facebook page, which is Chick Chat Seattle, and then you guys are on Twitter as well. And there's been a lot of buzz on Twitter about the party and people releasing pictures and different things like that. I will say that also the party that I was at, there were a lot of couples, and they were just having fun. And a lot of times, even as couples, you're always looking for something to do as a couple that you can do together. And this is another great thing that people can go out to and dance and.
Yeah, it's a different night out, right? So we definitely do have a fair amount of couples have purchased tickets as well. We sold about 225 tickets. I'm hoping for 300, but if we wanted to, we could open it up to 400 just because the size of the venue is two stories, and so we could do that if necessary. But so, yeah, I encourage people to come out and be part of the whole Gatsby kind of craze and have a really fun and different and memorable, you know, night out.
And, you know, it is an event that's I'm really interested in, because my uncle, he was in federal prison over there in, I don't know, right over somewhere right around here in Seattle, and for being a rum runner. And the year he got out, he was in prison for a year, and the year he got out, they legalized it. That's just our family's luck. You know, he was 1 year late.
Well, it's very interesting once you start looking into the history of Prohibition and the history of it within our own state. And, yeah, it's pretty amazing. And you know, right or wrong, you know, the parties like this kind of glorify it all. But I think it would have been kind of a fun time to be. I mean, the whole Roaring Twenties was just all about decadence and fun and kind of living on the edge. So I mm-hmm. kind of wanted to celebrate that in a way. So, and of course,
Well, it's going to be a fun time. It's going to be fun. The parties always are. They, you know, we sent someone there to the Venetian party. They're still talking about it. I still see pictures popping up. They had a great time.
Okay.
And like I said, you know, it was a very memorable event for the people that went that we sent. And then for myself, when I went to the 50 Shades party at the Columbia Tower, it was fantastic. It was a very, very memorable night, one I will never, ever forget. So it's well worth
you.
The price because it is a life event for people. You know, they're going to go to a party that's going to be something they'll remember for the rest of their life.
Well, yeah, we would like, it's $30 for general admission and $55 for VIP, and we'd like to, you know, give one of your listeners two tickets, general admission tickets, if they like Chick Chat Seattle. And Epiphany Events LLC, and post on the Epiphany Events page, and then we'll pick one winner. They should also post on your page, I would presume, and we'll pick one winner randomly, and they'll be going to Gatsby.
Well, there you go. See, now you can get there for free, and all you have to do is open up your laptop or computer or your Safari on your phone, and you can. It's easy, easy, easy to do and to like stuff. All right, Tracy. Well, I'll look forward to hearing how this party went. I'm sure it's going to be great, and then we'll see what your next party brings.
Yes, thanks for being such a supporter and having me on. I appreciate it.
No problem. It's my pleasure. Good luck.
Hey, thanks, Lori. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. There's all kinds of things going on in Seattle. The weather is great. People are out and about, and you can get over there to the Seattle 7 Writers. You can go to their page, Seattle7writers.org, and see that they're going to be having a band. The band's going to play tonight, and they're going to do a book reading at the same time over in Queen Anne. You could do that. And then you can also get over to Chick Chat Seattle on Facebook and get over to their party, their Gatsby party, that's going to be over there at Ashton Manor, which is a closed-off, not open to the public. You'll be able to get in there. And it was the same thing when I went to the Columbia Tower for the 50 Shades party. Columbia Tower at the very top was closed off, and so it was a private event that we were able to get into. And just to have that opportunity, it was worth the price of admission. So if you're in the Seattle area or you can get to Seattle for any of Tracy's events, I will say that she is the best party planner I've ever seen. And I've been to some great parties, but she continues to top herself every single time. So we're going to go out. That's the end of the show today. I'm going to let you listen to one of my favorite bands in Seattle, Meal Frog, and their Hey Girl. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bumping and shaking on the lights. We're gonna do it wrong. We're gonna do it right. Till you're right.